Tom Parry, you ever had an odd feeling of deja vu when you sit down on a podcast mic? That what you're about to talk about, you've already talked about.
I do now.
Let's get into it. It's Tom and Matt Attack again.
Matthew,
yes,
are you
Thomas.
Just telling me that everything we recorded is gone, not just a small portion of it?
Well, Thomas, I'm running off that assumption because I don't know when it turned off. we were about, I don't know, about 10 minutes, 15 minutes maybe into a podcast. And I looked over at our little handy recorder, H4N Zoom. And alas, Thomas, there was no light on. Nobody was home, and the podcast.
What happened there? It wasn't meant to be, was it?
It wasn't, apparently. Well, we can recant those last minutes.
Yeah,
short and sharp.
Let's just chat a little about the flea market you went to today.
I did, yes. I went to a flea market this morning.
Oh, I forgot the bit where I said, "Oh, it's really miserable outside.
I've got a cold. Oh, woe is me."
You didn't miss much, did you?
No.
I was saying, let's talk about some happy things. Let's brighten our days with a fun little anecdote about Matt's trip to the flea market.
Yes, and I will get into that now. So I went to a flea market this morning. It's not the setup of a joke, I promise. The only joke is that we've already talked about this in great length. We're ready to get off the subject, but never mind. It's okay. It's how podcasting goes, Tom. So I went to a flea market this morning.
I know.
And it is a flea market you and I have both been to.
Yeah,
is in the DGI Hoosit.
You have to pay to get in.
Which is a gym, yeah. And core blimey, Tom Parry, it used to be 20 kroner and now it's 35. How did you know that?
Unbelievable.
No, so I went round. I saw some folks from work. I saw our friend Tiago, who was there purchasing Pokemon cards.
No surprises there.
There was a few other people getting various bits and bobs, some Lego, some teddy bears, and all different things. Hmm. And
a lot of antiques, aren't there?
There is, well. Yeah. There's a ton of them. Thank you for reminding me. There's been a growing number of stalls in this particular flea market run by professionals rather than by just people who are bringing their stuff to a flea market.
Yeah.
As the prices are slowly rising as well, to get in, it started at 20, it's now 35. I've started to be more and more concerned by this.
It's not as good as it used to be.
No, definitely not. No. It's a nice morning out. When you and I went, we did genuinely pick up some really nice PS2
games.
That
one time I went,
and some other things were pretty cheap. This time, however, there wasn't really that much there. Even the stall that I've gone to many times in the past, long-term listeners will know, I've bought some AGS 101s off this guy. I bought shit tons of Game Boy games way back in the day. And I also bought that limited edition Pokemon DSi I have from this same guy.
Mm.
And they've all been relatively cheap. And always he's got a decent supply of Game Boy Advance games for, you know, usually around 30 kroner. Some of the more choice cuts, like Sonics and Pokemons and stuff, he'll price accordingly. But generally speaking, they're about 30 kroner. This time, they were priced at 50. And I was like, okay, is there really going to be anything I want in these tubs that's worth 50 kroner? A few games in the back of my head.
They were Tupperware tubs, weren't they?
They were Tupperware tubs, yeah. There's a few things I was just like, okay, if this is in here, I'll buy 50 kroner. If that's in there, I'll buy 50 kroner. Obviously, if I see a second copy of Ninja Cop or Ninja
Fibo,
you
have a copy of that,
have a copy of that, then I would have got it. But I stifled through, I had a look. And one game that caught my eye, Tom Parry, one that you and I played this morning, is Racing Gears Advance. It is a top-down racing game.
Which I didn't expect. Looking at the cover, I expect something similar to OutRun.
Well, no, to be honest with you, like looking at the cover of it,
Asphalt Urban, it looked like, but asphalt, you know.
Other than a kind of a generic logo, there's some cars that look like computer renders.
Yeah. There's a lot more character in it than would appear.
Yeah, definitely. It looks like, to be honest with you, I was expecting it to be a top-down, a behind-the-car view, like Need for Speed clone. I was expecting it to be like a Ridge Racer or something like that, but no, it isn't. It's actually a top-down game.
Yeah, similar to something like RC Pro AM.
Yes, but also your comparison to Rock and Roll Racer and Micro Machines, I think is pretty apt.
Yeah.
We're going to do this for the first 10 minutes of this podcast now, where we're both going to try and second guess which bit of the information we've already said the other person's going to say. It's going to be fun. We'll get there first.
Yeah.
It seemed pretty good.
Great presentation. And in similar way to Micro Machines, there's a bunch of different characters in the game that you can select.
Yeah. There is a lot of style to it, actually. There's some really nice music. The characters themselves look good.
Reminded me a little bit of Jet Set Radio.
Yeah, a little bit, actually, in the tone.
With its beats.
With its beats. The characters are definitely inspired by Micro Machines, but the cars are actually licensed.
Yeah, that also surprised me.
Which is a bit weird.
You can get a Dodge Viper, which is all you need to know.
Exactly. there was a few other bits in there as well. Some Fords, some Lotus. Yeah. It's interesting. Like, it seems like a very strange game to have those licensed cars in.
Yeah.
Handled pretty good. Had some interesting mechanics where sometimes, because it's a top-down game, your view would be obscured by scenery.
Hmm.
And so it would, like, put an indicator arrow on your car if you were driving through scenery. So not only could you see where it was, but what direction you were facing.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of
very
nice.
Well thought out game. Yeah. Great graphics, great presentation. And gameplay seems solid, although difficult.
Yes.
I would say. There are weapons in the game, which reminded me of a game like Wrecked, which is a game you can get on PS3 and Xbox 360. Just want to take a moment to recommend it to those who haven't played it. It's made by Supersonic, who did Micro Machines. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Check it out if you haven't already. I don't think it ever got a physical release. So.
No, it didn't. Which is a shame.
But it's in the vein of Mashed.
Yes.
You know, it's like the sequel to
PS2 game.
Yeah, I mean, you can buy Mashed on PS2 and Xbox.
There's two versions of it, though, right?
Cause Mashed and Mashed Fully Loaded, yeah.
Yeah, and I have Fully Loaded.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not too bad. Like I said, it was 50 crowns, and usually, as long-time listeners of the podcast also know, I'm not really a fan of racing games. I would have left it. However, a couple of months ago, when I was doing this whole debate about whether I should go for a full set of Game Boy Advance and Game Boy Color, something... As time goes on, I'm debating, just going, nah, I'll just pick up the games I want. It seemed like this was a pretty obscure game, so I got out the phone and I was just like, this game's name is on my list of like things that if I see, I should pick up. And lo and behold, I looked on eBay and there was about 20 quid for a cart for this game usually.
And
loose.
Game Boy Advance cartridges are quite small. I was thinking about this. You know, do you necessarily want to pay £20 for a loose Game Boy Advance cartridge? Of course, the game contained within the cart is worth the money, but is there something about the size of a cartridge that might put you off spending that amount of money on
it? Well, I mean, theoretically speaking, you are paying, what, like 30, 40 quid for a Vita game, and let's be honest, that is just a plastic shell and
it's a really stupid argument, because you can pay a lot of money for a download game, you don't even get a physical copy.
I mean, like, Switch games now aren't that much bigger. They're about half the size of a Game Boy Advance game.
So, you know, size really doesn't matter, but, you know, when I see a Game Boy Advance game for 20 quid, you know, I think, I still think that, you know, I still get a moment where I think, well, that's quite a lot.
To be honest with you, those games I picked up in Blue City last week, like the Turtles Collection, the Konami Double Cart, they were about, I think they were pricing it at like a tenner before that, and I was like, oh, I'm not paying a tenner.
Because it's a Game Boy Advance.
Two amazing Game Boy Advance games, but that seems a bit high.
If it was on a bigger cartridge, say like a NES cartridge.
You know, if it was a copy of Turtles in Time, it would be a different story, right? But
yeah, this is how you can justify stupidly expensive copies of Little Samson, isn't it?
It is, yeah. That's gone, by the way. Someone's bought that.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
I guess they saw an episode of Game Chasers and decided they needed it.
Maybe, yeah, they had to have it and all that jazz. Yeah, so while I was there, I picked up that. That was the only retro handheld related purchase I made that day. I walked around a little bit more, and to my surprise, there was a stall with a few little bits and bobs on it, some like My Little Ponies stuff, and some knockoff G.I. Joes and things. No, I didn't. I messaged the usual suspects, and neither of them wanted any of them. So I looked, and under the table I could see that there was a stack of other toys, and so I bent down to look there, and behind a big stack of Barbie dolls and stuff, there was a ton of PS1 games, and I was like, ooh, yes!
So you had to do a bit of rummaging.
I did, yeah, you know, in hopes of finding another Tombi, because it is Tombies all the way down in Denmark. So I looked, and the top one was like 102 Dalmatians, and then it was Tekken 3, and there's like a few other things like Disney's Atlantis and Hidden Dangerous. Nothing that really caught my eye. And as I was going down this stack of games that all were clearly didn't have their manuals, I found a copy of a game I actually kind of wanted, and that was Jurassic Park Warpath.
The spiritual successor to Primal Rage.
God damn it, stop stealing my lines. yeah, this is a... This is a Jurassic Park one-on-one fighting game, and...
Well, I think you can also eat people in the same way you can in Primal Rage.
Oh, really?
I think you can.
Oh, man. Yeah. Fuck, you should have told me that. And I saw it. It was 5 kroner, and I was like, oh, yeah, man.
Oh, yeah. Bit of dino action for 5 kroner.
I flipped it over to see the back of it to make sure it was the one-on-one fighting game. Mm. And the first cause for alarm was that it was the back of a Shrek party game for the PS1, and it looked rather water damaged. And I was just like, oh boy.
Oh,
and so
it just gets worse, doesn't it, Matthew?
I opened it, and the front of the artwork, the little slidey bit of artwork, was just completely covered in like black mold. These have clearly been in someone's basement or garage, which hadn't been well insulated. And I was like, oh, fuck. And so I put it back. I was like, actually, you know what? I'm going to get it. I'll just throw the case. It's fine. I'll keep the disc. I'll pop it in some other thing. And then I flicked the disc over, and it just had these massive, like, white grooves in the back. Like, yeah, someone had taken a coin to it.
Probably not going
to
work.
Probably not going to work. And to be honest with you, even for 50 pence, I was just like, ugh, you know what? I'm not going to take the risk. Bugger it.
You'll find a better copy one day.
I will. I mean, you know, as I said to you previously when we recorded this segment of the podcast, copy a Tombi for 5 kroner, you take the gamble.
You take the gamble. Yeah.
And, you know,
this is a bit more readily available.
Yeah,
I would,
well, one would hope, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest with you, if I walk into a retro game shop, perhaps I will see a copy.
And I think you'll live if you never play it, won't you? I think you'll probably get over it.
I don't
you
know,
never
Tom. I don't know. I mean, I still have that stamp on my hand. That flea market's still open till 4. Maybe I'll go back. Maybe the regret will eat at my heart and I'll go back and see. But I did pick up some PS1 games, believe it or not.
On a lighter note, or should I say, a darker note?
Yes. After I after I turned around, there was another stall. They had the Vice City soundtrack. It was 50 kroner. I wasn't going to pay that.
Matt, why didn't you buy that?
Because we live in an age where I don't need CDs anymore, Tom. And it was heartbreaking for you to understand.
There's a convenience of just whopping in a CD, isn't there? And
but there's a convenience of me holding down my thumb on the iPad, going into Spotify, and undoubtedly playing the Vice City soundtrack
from
there.
You can get that
there
on Spotify.
One would assume. If not, it's mostly licensed music. So
you
I
could create your own playlist of it.
I would make the assumption that someone has already made that playlist. I will double check.
But when I said darker side, that is because... Oh, yeah. We're not jumping to that yet.
No, I'm just going to say
that?
It's all right. I picked up a game called... there was a few bits on a little shelf.
Yeah.
Some PS2 games. Nothing really spectacular, but they had some PS1 games. Mm. And one that caught my eye immediately as a JRPG fan was Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, Iron & Blood, Warriors of Ravenloft. Not
Which
only the longest
sounds...
title to fit on a PlayStation 1 spine, but also sounded like a Western RPG. And I was like, oh, I'll have that. And then I picked it out, and no, as Tom Parry well knows, it is the dark side of 3D fighting, as you said to me.
Yeah, and so it points it out on the front, and that is maybe why it doesn't have that PlayStation banner at the bottom, so they can just fit that on there, so you're not in any doubt of what kind of game
this is. Tom, you and I are both professional graphic designers. They could have literally just moved that up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Shrunk their logos just a teeny tiny bit to go in there. Then they could have put that PlayStation in. But
they could have done, but you were saying it might be an earlier title. It's in 96.
I assume so.
Not all games had that PlayStation banner at the bottom, did they?
No, they did not.
No, but it's very clear on the back as to what kind of game it is, where it says, no 3D fighter can match the brutal action of Iron and Blood. And it is a weapons-based fighter. I have played it myself, and I think it was all right. Not a bad game. No, definitely not the worst fighter I've ever played.
Grand Theft Auto Vice City playlist is on there.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
I stand corrected, Matthew.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a quid. They had this, they had Populous.
That's good for a quid, because when I bought this game myself, it must have cost me more than a quid. I bought it off eBay. So.
Yeah.
And it was one of those games which I wasn't aware of as a collector of PS1 fighting games and fighting games in general. This one appeared on my radar quite late on, actually. It wasn't a game I knew existed until much later on.
It's a game I've never seen, to sort be of perfectly honest.
It flies under the radar, doesn't it, this one? And doesn't get talked about very often.
Retro Collect listed it as uncommon.
Uncommon. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, but I mean, you worked in games retail when PS1 games were still traded in. I was actively looking through every single pile of PS1 games I've seen for the last 20 years for a copy of Symphony of the Night, and I've never seen it. So for 10 kroner, I picked it up. They also had Populous at the beginning. And
which doesn't support a mouse.
No, it doesn't, which is a shame. Analog controls, though, so it's all right. And... yeah, I mean, I have the Game Boy version of Populous. Why not give that a go as well? Tom Barry, what have you been buying and playing?
Congratulations, Matthew. You recounted what we'd previously recorded.
Yay!
Wonderful. We hope you enjoyed that. And I think maybe it was better second time round.
Maybe.
So you didn't miss anything.
It was more concise. I didn't babble. If there's a little bit of it on you, maybe I'll throw it at the end just so you can see where you could have won.
You can compare. Compare and contrast. Well, we're on the subject of secondhand games and retro games, so let me talk a little bit about my eBay purchases for this week.
You've been on the electronic bay.
Oh, I have a little bit.
Crikey, silly old me. Tom.
So this guy was selling Japanese fighting games, and well, not specifically Japanese fighting games, but he happened to have a couple of Super Nintendo games which I was interested in.
Okay.
I'd stumbled across a list of top 10 or something worth fighting games, which I've seen before, and it's a fairly substandard video.
Are most of them on the Game Boy?
No, I don't think it's a very good list, to be honest. Okay. But it reminded me of a game called Cho Anaki Chionik Bakuretsu Rantu. Read that, Matthew.
Okay, right.
It's a series I am familiar with.
Cho Anaki. because it says the same thing twice. It says Cho Anaki Bakuretsu Rant Udon.
And it's from the franchise of games which the scantily clad men appear in.
Okay.
Do you know this series? There is a side-scrolling shooter based on this franchise.
I'm trying to click on it. The image won't... Oh, yeah. It's this.
Yeah.
Yes, I do recognize this. Yeah. Okay.
So I previously played the side-scroller that was developed for PS1, including digitized characters.
Yes.
Back in the day, there was also a side-scroller for the Super Nintendo. Where the characters were made out of pixels, and this is a fighting game with that same visual style. And yeah, it appeared in this list of worst fighting games ever.
Okay, it's got very odd character sprites from what I could see.
And it's flying. You're flying around and fighting.
Yes.
As opposed to standing on the ground. Like maybe... a Dragon Ball Z fighting game or Astro Superstars, you know.
Okay, I wonder
like
if that's based on an anime of any chance.
It looks incredibly choppy. Really, animation looks really bad. It
doesn't surprise me.
In it. But the insaneness of the game is high.
Yes.
There are some very wacky things going on in that game. For example, one of the stages, there's a train with a human face, not so dissimilar to... Thomas Tank Engine, with giant muscular arms chugging around.
Okay.
There's lots of wacky stuff going on, and I thought, wow, that's a Super Nintendo fighter I'd like to own. Comes with a CD as well, like a mini disc CD, maybe with a soundtrack on.
Oh, weird.
Which you don't see every day, do you?
Okay.
So, yeah, and then I saw that it's also delicious, according to the cartridge.
Interesting.
It says on there. So this guy is also selling some more games, and another game that caught my eye was a game I've played before, an emulator. That's Sailor Moon S Fighting, which is, as it sounds, a Sailor Moon fighting game based on Sailor Moon S, where I've forgotten her name now. The main character, she has a daughter, doesn't she? She's
yes,
the pink-haired
she does.
One. And yeah, I played this one before, and it was pretty good. So happy to
her
add
name
that.
Is Serena.
Yes. Wow. Well done. You've got better memory than I have.
It's almost as if I was researching it for a Game Boy Vita.
Sailor Mars,
recently.
Sailor Jupiter, Sailor Neptune.
Yeah, it's the later stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, two Japanese Super Nintendo or Super Famicom fighters there.
That's added not
to
bad.
Added to the collection.
Add them to the pile.
Add them to the pile, indeed. And two Wii U games. The apparently not so good Mario Party 10.
Yeah.
And Hyrule Warriors, both for £15 each. I thought that was reasonable.
That's not bad.
Because as I looked at my Wii U collection, I felt, I'm missing a couple of key Nintendo first-party games.
Warriors,
Tom Barry. I think I need to get these two, so I purchased them.
Oh, that's good, Tom Barry.
Now, I have a fairly complete Wii U collection.
Do you have Funky Barn?
No.
Then you know.
Nor do I want Funky Barn.
Then you do not have a complete Wii U collection,
I don't,
my friend.
But I actually have a fairly comprehensive Wii U collection consisting of, I think, some of the best games for the system.
I would agree. Looking at it, like I said, I think there are two or three games I would like before I consider my Wii U collection complete.
Yeah, I still want to play Tank Tank Tank, even though it didn't get the greatest reviews. It still looks like a unique enough concept. I like Battle Tanks on the N64. Yeah. This looks like it could be similar to that.
I would imagine so.
So I'd still like to get that, and it's about, I think, the only physical Wii U game that I really want. I mean, I could get Darksiders, that upgraded edition.
Yeah.
That might be worthwhile. But then again, I own the original.
In all fairness, it was only about 50
yeah,
quid.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap. I could pick that up if I wanted.
And that was new. It's probably cheaper now. That's what it came out as.
Yeah. I might just pick that up for completionist's sake. But yeah, there's a couple of digital games I want to play. I played a bit of the Trine 2 demo. I'd never give Trine any sort of... Trine. Yeah. I never gave it any attention, but I'd read, you know, looking at the list of best reviewed Wii U games, this was a pretty good game. So I downloaded the demo and I played through it and I thought, wow, this looks really pretty. It's got loads of unique ideas, essentially a puzzle platform that you can play multiplayer. And I thought, well, I might have to pick that up at some point.
It was a free PlayStation Plus game very, very early on into the PS4.
Oh, I never got it, I don't think.
Honestly, it was before you had one. I think it was while we were still living together. I wasn't that impressed by it.
You weren't. You can play as the wizard and the archer and the soldier.
Yeah. I don't know.
Each
it didn't
with a
do
unique
it for
ability.
Me.
What I liked about the wizard was how he could kind of lift objects. I thought all the controls were very well mapped out.
I thought they felt a bit floaty. I don't know.
There is a certain floatiness to it, but design-wise, very nice.
I mean, visually, yes.
I thought it was a very competent, sort of a throwback-type platform game.
Yeah.
So I might just pick that up. It was a director's cut that I played the demo of. I don't know the difference.
But I would look. I know you were saying you want it for the Wii U, but I would also look on the PlayStation 4 because I would imagine it's probably cheaper.
About $12.99 on the Wii U.
Hey, man, I see that game in a sale a lot because it was a PlayStation Plus game. So
I also sort of read about another game called Tadpole Treble, which is apparently a very, very good Wii U game.
Okay.
Something about melodies and tadpoles and... sounded interesting anyway, but I couldn't find it on the store. There was another one, Little Inferno. I know this game, and I've been meaning to play this for a long while, so I might just pick that one up. But that's available on the Switch now as
it
well.
It is.
So yes, definitely coming to the end of purchasing games for the Wii U, I'd say. I did notice, it surprised me a lot, that they had F1 Race Stars on the Wii U, which was a PS3, Xbox 360 game, which is a lot like Mario Kart, but with Formula One characters. I might have talked about it in the podcast.
I believe so, way back when.
I got it recently. I definitely done a bit on Parry's pickups about it a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
I never knew it was released for the Wii U. It's the powered up edition. It still costs £20.
Yeah.
As it's a big game.
Yeah.
But on a console that's got Mario Kart, it's definitely not a must-have. Still curious that it exists on the Wii U.
Yeah.
And never got a physical release.
Interesting.
To my knowledge.
Like I said, there's a few things I want to pick up for the Wii U. Actually, one thing I would like to pick up for the Wii U, which is odd because I will never be able to play it, is the HD remakes of Yakuza 1 and 2.
Yeah, I thought you might want them.
Yeah.
But Japanese Wii Us are expensive, I guess, unless you're in Japan and you can get one at a good price.
They were still pretty expensive while I was in Japan.
Yeah. Importing them seems ridiculous.
The only reason I didn't buy that Yakuza game is because it was like £30-40. It was pretty expensive, even in Japan, because it didn't sell very well.
Can you get the PS3 version of that?
There is a PS3 version of it, but then I thought, well, do I really need it? I have the first game.
Be curious
and
to see
one.
It running.
Yeah.
I guess it's just high resolution.
Yeah, I think
basically.
So.
Basically.
I mean, I'll pick one of them up eventually. It's not like it's the
for
last
your
time
Yakuza
I've...
collection.
Yeah, it's not the last time I've ever gone to Japan.
I mean, if you're
so...
going to get those Yakuza glasses.
Oh, man. I'm so annoyed that that's sold out everywhere.
Is it?
Yeah.
You weren't that sold on it first time I mentioned it.
I would have bought it for the giggles, but it sold out everywhere, which is a shame.
Oh.
So it goes.
Take a game I've been playing. Picked it up actually on Mental Health Awareness Day, where the proceeds were all donated to a mental health charity.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Hellblade. It cost £25. All the profit that Ninja Theory would have made have gone to
Oh, that's a shame I didn't know that. I've been meaning to buy that game for a while.
So, yeah, I thought that's a perfect opportunity to pick it up.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I would have, you know, picked it up right there and then had it not been for the charitable angle.
Yeah.
Because this game does, you know, concern some mental health issues.
Yeah.
And it's actually, as you start the game, the first credit that rolls up is mental health advisor.
Yes.
So they really did spend a lot of time. You play a troubled character. Her name is, it's hard to pronounce her name. It's okay. Senua, I think. And she's got a lot of voices in her head, you know. She's got voices telling her that she can't do this telling her she's wrong. And there's a lot of conflicting emotions going on in her head as she embarks on this journey to rescue a friend. It's not quite clear exactly yet, but she's on this journey. And incredibly beautiful game. It opens up when you're on this little boat and you can really appreciate the visuals. And I took a few screenshots, actually. It's one of those games where it looks so nice. I had to take a few screenshots. And the character model for, I call her Senua right now, okay, because I can't remember if that character should be pronounced. She looks fantastic, and the eyes look very real as well.
Yeah, from the looks of things, her name's Senua, maybe?
Senua. I think that's...
S-E-N-U-A.
It's not a name you encounter every day. Therefore, it's hard to remember. But it suggests you play it with headphones as well, which does actually bring that voices aspect to the game really to the forefront.
Yes.
And creates an incredibly unique experience. And the way that affects the gameplay and how you play is also quite interesting, because it will try and mess with your head, like saying, oh, don't do that, or... oh, you need to do this, or why did she do that?
Okay.
You know, as you play it, oh, what a stupid thing to do. And sometimes it's the right thing to do, but your voices in your head will tell you otherwise.
Okay.
So this creates an experience like none other that I've ever had before. It's very cinematic. It's reasonably linear, as it's been so far, but I think that's just the nature of the game. The camera is placed quite close to the character's back.
Yeah.
So it's not like... fully expertive, you know, you can't travel anywhere you want. You're following a path. I've just been introduced to the combat, which, and again, this game doesn't give you any kind of hints as to what the buttons are either. So you just have to work it out on the fly.
Okay.
So it turns out like square is attack, and you've got an R1 is your block, and these things come to you. But I think you're meant to lose the first fight in the end, where it introduces this another unique mechanic to you where... as you die in game, you are rotting. Your soul
like a tattoo
is kind
going
of
up your arm,
yeah.
Right.
And if you die too many times, then it's game over. Back to that, you lose all your progress.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if that was communicated to the player in the original when it was first released.
Yes.
Because I remember there were stories about people feeling that it was unfair and they didn't know necessarily that they were going to lose all their progress. Sorry. But it's very clear in the game that if you do die too many times, you will go back to the beginning.
Yes.
Which is kind of cool. It definitely puts more of an emphasis on... because you feel like you're teetering on the edge of something all the way through the game.
Yeah.
You know, the stakes are very high. And that only adds to this experience.
Yes.
I can't say how unique and how well made it is enough, because it really is something you should experience. And I think even though it isn't got a physical copy or anything, it's a digital only game, it is one of those PlayStation must haves.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's definitely on my bucket list.
Because I've never played anything like it.
No.
Really.
To be honest with you, like, for the end of this year, I think there are three games that are on the PlayStation 4 that I would like to beat. Hellblade is one of them. Pyre, I've talked about. Yeah. Supergiant enough on this podcast, so everyone knows I'm a big fan of those. I need to pick that up. I also want to play Uncharted Lost Legacy. To be honest with you, the reason I haven't done that yet is because I started the game by beating Uncharted 1, so I'm like, well, maybe I should beat the last Uncharted game to cap off the year. So maybe I'll do that on New Year's Day.
We've got a plan.
Yeah.
Yes, that's interesting.
But one game that's been on my bucket list for forever that I'm almost done with is Nier Automata. Yeah, as listeners of the podcast will know, I started it last week and I've pretty much finished it already.
That shows you're very much into it, or you had a lot of time.
I have been on my ass sick, and to be honest with you, I probably would have finished it already had I not just got massive headaches on like Friday afternoon. Like yesterday afternoon, I had to turn the game off and go back to bed because my head just hurt. Not good. At least my chest pain's gone. I thought, to be honest, I'd been out running in the rain on Wednesday. And after Marta, my fiance's previous experience with this kind of stuff, I thought maybe I'd got pneumonia, and I was like, "Oh shit, did I overdo it?" Blah blah blah. But no, I seem to be fine. I've just got a stuffy nose now and a little bit of a headache, but nothing too serious. So that's all good. But as a result of that, I got fully stuck into Nier Automata. I am very close, for those who've played it, to ending C. However, I will not really talk about anything beyond ending A. So those of you who have played the game or are looking to play the game, I will not give massive spoilers away
I don't want to know too much, because I do intend on playing it. I was very impressed with what I had played of the game.
Yes.
Which, unfortunately, is very little.
You've played the starting hour. Yeah. I would say get on it. Playthrough A... it's about 6 hours, I think. It's not very long in that regard. Like, now I'm on about 18.
But now, you say play through A because this is following the similar Nier format.
Yes.
Of having several.
Well, actually,
endings,
it's the Drakengard format. Those of you who don't know, way back when, there was a game called Drakengard for the PS2. There have been three of them, two for the PlayStation 2, and then the third one on the PS3. Didn't get a physical release here, unfortunately. It did in America and Japan.
Did it get a digital release?
It did, yes. Drakengard series is a vertically scrolling shooter. You're flying on the back of
it's
drag.
It's a vertically scrolling shooter?
I believe so, isn't it?
I thought it was more a third-person action-adventure
I
game.
Had always assumed it was a shooter. I have not played them. I own the first two, but... I'm pretty sure it's a shooter. That's where the lineage of shooting games comes into all this. Could be wrong on that. If I am, tweet us. You know where. I'm actually going to go back and play Drakengard after this so I can correct myself next week, maybe. I
just assumed that, maybe.
Yeah. I had always assumed that, and then I was told by someone, no, it's a shooter, and that's why I didn't necessarily rush to pick it up, because I had thought with the words Squaresoft on the front of it, there was going to be an RPG. But I could be wrong. I can Google that.
Yeah, we can do this. Yeah.
We have the technology. Anyways, whoa. So I played the first hour last week, like I said, and... I tried to play a little bit more of Cuphead. No, it says action role-playing game. Interesting. I played a bit more of it than I was perhaps expecting to. I put on Cuphead. I got to about 50% of it and said, you know what, actually, I just want to play more of Nier. I think I'm going to beat Nier first. And so I put the controller down. And I got into it. It's a very interesting game. At the moment, I couldn't tell you, even with how far I am into the game, if I prefer the first game or this one.
Okay. It's a little different.
It is.
It?
Yeah. The first one, though, has... Yeah, I saw it's an action adventure, but there are shooting elements in it, apparently.
I'll just show you, Matt, a clip of Drakengard.
Of a guy walking very stuntily. There's a lot going on in this game. And I think... Yeah. It's perhaps a bit more on the nose, at least at the start, in your initial experience, than the first Nier was. The first Nier was very much playing with expectations. you were a guy who was trying to look out for your daughter and then tried to save your daughter, and so you were killing things without any real question to the nature of the things you were killing. And as you play through the first Nier game, some of your expectations of video game villains and things are subverted in interesting ways, and it actually kind of makes you question what you're doing as a player. A lot of what you see in Nier Automata, like right out of the gate, is machines saying and doing things that make them seem very human, but the androids 2B and 9S, who are the people you're playing as, have no sympathy for these machines because they are putting it down to their emotions to being just raw blanket things that they are saying to try and distract the androids. And there's this huge war going on because apparently the machines were built by aliens who came to Earth, and then the humans are on the moon, and that's why the androids are trying to claim Earth back so the humans who are on the moon can come back down and live on Earth once more. And as you're going about this, you learn that there are lots of androids on Earth. There are other people in your Yora, is the name of the organization you're a part of. And as you're battling through, you find that some of the robots have become pacifists. Some of them just don't want to fight. You will run into enemy units that are just purely just like reciting things that make you look at how they're structured. And they seem to be... There are some that are part of like a kingdom, like they form their own kingdom, and some that want to live in peace, and others who've kind of formed a weird religious sect.
So there's a robotic society, an android society on Earth, where all the other Earth things are on the moon.
No, the androids are actually on like a space station, and they come down to Earth to try and fight these machines, they call them, which are just these robots that live on Earth.
There's robots that live on Earth now.
Yes.
And the humans don't live on Earth.
Humans don't live on Earth.
But the androids live in a space station and come down to sort of
fight
the machines who have built up a society. Some are pacifists, whereas some are not.
Yes.
Some are out to get you.
Some of them don't speak at all. Some of them just attack you. But there are supposedly aliens on Earth. And
do they build the robots?
They built the robots, and apparently they are what repelled the humans. And so you're trying to get to the bottom of that, but you take it as it is. A lot of the things you were fighting in the start of that game, that giant... Yeah. Oh, God, I've forgotten the name of the bloody things. All of the classes of machine have different names. They're called Goliath class, I think. The ones with the skull and the big chainsaw arms that are gigantic creatures. And as you're killing these things and going along, the androids themselves, 2B and 9S, start to question the nature of what they're doing in relation to these machines.
Yes, because they're part robotic themselves, aren't they? They're killing machines.
They are,
they're half machine themselves.
But they are, you know, the machines on Earth are made by aliens. They are not, they serve no purpose other than to destroy, and they want to kill humanity and all this. Mm. Whereas the androids have been made by the humans in their own image. Mm. And that's a big thing here. It's just like, well, we are like the chosen machines. You are just the machines who invaded you. It's a very thinly veiled like race and other things going on in that.
Mm.
But
you were made by aliens and we were made by humans.
Yes, and so, you know, they are superior because they're made in the image of humans, whereas these machines on Earth are just made.
But these machines, it's a little bit more complex. There's always going on under the surface. Yeah.
And I mean, that is a trait of Nier. And to be honest with you, that saying that isn't a spoiler because the game is so outright in saying it. The game throws around like a lot of things to start with. You go to like there's like a resistance camp of these androids who are on Earth who are fighting the machines. And some of them are just like, oh, wouldn't it be good if we weren't fighting each other? Like in not as subtle a way as that, but like obviously better written. It was just sometimes I wonder why we fight this war, da da da. And I'm like, man, this was a huge like reveal in here. This seems like they're just throwing this out there. It's like, okay, cool, right, what's going to happen then? Because these are games, in my experience, the Nier titles, where there have been a lot of twists and turns. And there definitely are some. And as I go through the game, especially on the Route C playthrough, as it is called, the third time going through the game, where everything is dramatically different, I can't figure out if I like it more than the first game or not, because the first one subverted my expectations in ways that I didn't really think about. And for a game that was probably about 6-7 years old by the time I played it, I was like, fuck me, this is a really good game. Not a lot of people say about this, how good a game Nier was. This one, it plays really well. I've gotten full grips now with the combat system of, like, dashing to evade and using the slash and using the guns and stuff. That feels really nice. There's a lot of, on the second time round, well, from the second playthrough, you get these hacking minigames as well. So you're not just doing top-down and vertically scrolling shooting levels. You actually, as 9S, you hack things. And then you're kind of forced to do like a dual joystick shooter, which is kind of interesting.
Do the hacking.
Yeah, on like a 2.5D perspective, but it's clearly it could be just be done in a 2D space. And then essentially what you have to do is you have to shoot these enemies that are coming towards you, and there's an orb with a like a shield around it, and then once you've killed all the enemies, the shield will drop. It's a very interesting game. Like I said, I wanna beat it. I'm very close to the end now. And when I have beaten it, I will give like a full verdict on the podcast. But I can't spoil it until, I guess, we get into Game of the Year stuff.
So I've got to play it.
You need to play it, Tom Parry.
Oh, but then I've got to play Yakuza 0. Well, Hellblade now. And, oh, I can't just do my dipping in and out of things, can I? I've got to actually dedicate myself to one game.
I mean, you know, from what I hear, Hellblade's about 6 hours.
yeah, I know it's not the longest game.
I would
probably get to the end of that.
I would honestly probably say play Yakuza at the moment. Yeah. I don't know why we're doing Small Man in a Box.
I feel like I have a lot of time at the moment, but we'll see. I'll try and play a bit more.
That's why I'm trying to get these out of the way, is to make time. And I, like I said, I think Pyre will be the game I play over Christmas. I don't think it'll be in my Game of the Year consideration, unfortunately. But we'll see. We shall see.
Mario is out at the end of this month.
It is.
That's exciting, isn't
it? I will be in the UK when it comes out, so I can pick it up for cheap. And then play on
a Wii.
Switch.
I was going to call it a Wii then.
You were. You completed your Wii Switch collection. A Wii Switch.
The Switch, yes, but a bit disappointed of the big old price difference. I know there's always one between the US and the UK, but we're not getting that case bundled in with it, and it's costing £50 more.
Hey man, remember that time I wanted that limited edition Zelda and it was cheaper and came with more things?
I think it costs £50 more if you want to buy the case as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's how it works out. It's annoying. It's very annoying.
Yeah, it really sucks.
But there you go. £50 is still £50, isn't it?
Do you happen to know anyone at work that's going to the US for any reason? There must be someone you can ask of someone going home.
It's region free, isn't it?
So. Fortunately for you, Thanksgiving's coming up, so maybe some colleagues are going home.
Yeah. If anyone's willing.
Yeah, let the man know.
Save myself some pennies.
Yeah.
Any more? Is there anything else coming out soon that people are getting excited about? Evil Within 2 came out the other day.
Looks
interesting. It's now a more open world affair than it was before.
I mean, Assassin's Creed, Wolfenstein are also coming out on the same day as Mario.
Wow, there's some heavy hitters.
There is. We're almost at the end of the releases, to be honest, but they're coming out thick and fast, especially in this month.
Is there anything else for Switch that's worth noting?
There's
got to be, hasn't there?
I mean, there are a ton of games coming out for the Switch.
But Nintendo were focused on Mario at the minute, aren't they? Yes, they are. So there's nothing else Nintendo going on, is there?
There's one or two JRPGs actually coming out.
There was a big deal about Stardew Valley coming out on Switch.
Yeah, that's out. Axiom Verge also out on the Switch now.
There's a game called Golf Story I'm quite interested in.
Yeah, that looks pretty interesting as well. That's
golf games.
From what I hear, though, that's kind of... It's a bit of a fun game. It's golf, but it's also like adventure.
Yeah, like the Mario Golf game was on the Game Boy.
Xenoblade Chronicles is coming out in December for the Switch.
Really? That's
so soon? Gear Club Unlimited, which is a racing game, is coming out for the Switch on the 1st of December.
Well, let's not write it off. It could be as good as
Sonic Forces is coming out
relatively
soon,
that's
right?
That's on my list of things. Although I'm still little dubious about it, but we'll see.
I don't blame you. It looks.
Then again, I have played and enjoyed to a degree every recent Sonic game. I even sort of enjoyed Sonic Boom.
Yeah.
A little.
Very little. L.A. Noire's coming out in November for the Switch. There is a thick and fast thing of games coming out for the Switch, like smaller titles that aren't showing up in this Amazon search, but they are coming.
Doom.
Not yet. Next year, I think.
Next year.
That's Dragon come Ball out. Xenoverse 2 is out for the
Dragon
Switch.
Dragon Ball Fighter Z.
Yeah.
That's coming out.
Yeah, Cinemora next month. Has now come out for the Switch. A physical copy of that game, which I really like.
Good game, but yeah.
I'll pick it up for £20. Why not? There are a few. I can't think of any. I'm assuming there's probably a new Just Dance and a few others. But that's how it goes.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what you guys are excited about. What you want for Christmas, maybe. What new games you're interested in.
Yeah, what are you looking forward to getting in this next coming month? It's going to be crazy.
Quite a lot going on. Have you not got a Switch yet? Are you going to get a Switch for Mario? Because that's certainly what I'm thinking about.
I mean,
that game looks fantastic.
I will definitely pick up that Mario
game.
There's
so much in it, isn't there? It's just like layers and layers of
ideas. I can't wait, to be honest, because I will have like a whole plane ride and a day of layovers to play that game. And I will also be in the UK and there won't be much going on. So I'll be good. Right, okay. That brings us to the end of the podcast then. Okay. If you have any interest in getting the Switch, or if you're thinking about what you're going to get on August 27th when all of these games drop, you can let us know on...
August 27th?
October 27th. Sorry.
Matthew.
You can let us know in a variety of places on Twitter at TMAcast. You can do so on facebook.com/TomAndMattAttack and on blastprocess.com and TomAndMattAttack.com/podcast.
That was one more thing.
What, Tom?
I played the beta version of Gran Turismo.
Oh, really?
Sport. Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cars?
I don't think you'll be disappointed if you like Gran Turismo.
Oh, well.
And it's a good alternative to Forza because, you know, it's also reasonably accessible as well as being a simulator.
And
so.
Not full of microtransactions, which Forza seems to be.
Perfect presentation, as normal, what you expect from the Gran Turismo series.
Level of polish. How many of those cars do you reckon are still PS2 cars with upgraded textures?
I don't know. It looks photorealistic, just about, you know.
Okay.
So it does look very nice. And I don't think the beta is available anymore, though, because I tried to play it this morning and it says, can't connect online.
Shit. That's a shame.
You can't do anything anymore.
I would have given it a go. Oh, well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than that, find us in iTunes and Stitcher when you're in iTunes.
We're out and about on that internet.
Cheeky rate,
you know?
And subscribe. And you can also find us on the blastprocess.com.
Yeah,
YouTube
check
channel.
Out all the Play Expo Manchester stuff coming from Blast Process on the YouTube channel. There'll be some interviews. There'll be this and that. A new feature of Mike versus Neil.
Yes.
He's going to begin at Play Expo, which is a great event happening this weekend in Manchester.
Cool. And by the time you hear this, there will probably be a new biographic up on Boxel. So enjoy that as well. Cool. That brings us to the end of this podcast. Tom Parry, it's been a pleasure doing this podcast with you twice.
Oh, thanks, Matt. Yeah. Same.
Until next week, Tom. Be sure to
game on.